North Pole, like many municipalities, directly benefits from revenue sharing of the state of Alaska-owned resources. The state of Alaska continues to gain a premium through the sale of Alaskan royalty oil at a cost of Alaskans. This especially affects us in rural or smaller communities. The increased premium the state receives for Alaska royalty oil is good for the state coffers, but detrimental to mine and the pockets of my residents. It is critically important to maintain revenue sharing. For the city of North Pole, a reduction of $10 million in revenue sharing is equal to about $33,200, and an increase in the PERS from 22 to 24% is another $50,800. This equals $81,000 to my already stressed budget for one full-time position. The city of North Pole, like many communities, use revenue sharing to offset operational expenses or taxes that are otherwise paid by our residents and businesses. The city of North Pole's revenue sharing is equal to about almost a half of a percent in sales tax, which is currently at 4%, or 0.6 mils of our property tax, which is currently 3.5. Until the state decides to give residents and local businesses the benefit of using their own resources at a cost not at a premium over what it trades for on the open market, revenue sharing should not be cut. Thank you for the time to testify.
Thank you, Mayor Ward. Susan Warner.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Warner, and I'm here to ask you not to spend money. I'm speaking as a property owner along Chena Small Tracks Road here in Fairbanks. State of Alaska Department of Transportation has a road improvement project scheduled for Chena Small Tracks Road at $1.1 million. You have it in your pocket to save up to $1 million in needless expense. If this project goes forward as currently designed, it will have the effect of creating an attractive nuisance that will have the real potential to lure a child to bodily injury, drowning, or death, where such a condition of an attractive nuisance did not exist before, and where a drastically cheaper and shovel-ready alternative already exists right across the street. Fairbanks Natural Gas has scheduled to excavate the south side of Chena Small Tracks Road this summer, beginning in June. They've staked and surveyed every 60 feet. If the project went back to the original design for a widened shoulder instead of spending a needless $1 million, if those two projects were to be funded concurrently and proceed concurrently this summer, you would be able to save the state up to $1 million. I know it's only $1 million, but the millions have got to add up. So please do not fund the Department of Transportation project for a Chena Small Track improvement. Thank you.
Thank you. Darlene Supley,
yes, thank you. Yeah. I am here on behalf of the North Star Council on Aging Fairbanks Senior Center, and I am here to address the NTS Support Service Grant, and we would like to thank you for the no funding for the core senior community grant program. That this particular program, the nutritional part of the program, really does affect a tremendous amount of seniors here in the state of Alaska. With the 58% growth rate in the state of Alaska of seniors, this need for this particular program is going to keep growing. This year, this particular program was able to aid an elderly couple who both were diagnosed with cancer at the age of 84. With the Meals on Wheels program, we were able to assist them with the nutrition that they needed while they were experiencing treatment. Towards the end, they both passed away in February at home, which was a blessing. We were able to actually send in one hot and one frozen meal so that they could continue to live at home independently. Due to the driver's daily interaction with the couple and the wellness check that occurs, that we were actually able to notify the family who all lived in the lower 48 when the family actually passed away. The couple had passed away on a Thursday, and we dropped meals to them on Wednesday, and when they did not answer the door on Thursday, we knew something was wrong. So it's because of this particular program that it allows the community to put eyes on seniors on a daily basis and to continue to make sure that they're getting that nutritional value that they need to prevent medical interactions due to malnutrition and the wellness check. So the program is structured as a beautiful program to support the aging community center. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Antonio, is it Schumate or Schumate?
Schumate, sir.
Okay.
I'm here on behalf of Mayor Eberhard, who is out sick today, but he asked us to come forward. And we echo North Pole's comments in reference to the increase in expenses for our PERS contributions and the revenue sharing. As we look at this, we can make a determination that for every $100,000 increase in expenses, it's about a 1% increase in the PERS contributions with the City of Fairbanks for its police and fire departments who are participants in the PERS system. And the City of, at the City of Fairbanks budget, we could lose the equivalent of about one full-time person in reference to that. So if the contributions rates went up from 22 to 24%, we could lose two full-time positions within our public safety department. And as we look at those things, we see a decrease in the services that may be impacted by what we provide here within the community, which would complicate the fact that we decrease services. It would most likely mean, or should, that we should be decreasing our employment levels. And for revenue sharing, the assessment internally is about $10 million reduction at the state level would equate to about $85,000 in reductions to the City of Fairbanks. Again, we're talking about one full-time position being lost. So our concerns here are that, hey, let's go back, take a look, let's restore the $10 million into the revenue sharing fund. And we should include in the governor's budget the $3 billion cash infusion in which we had for the PERS, because it helps us with the payments and it makes it dependable and it makes it affordable and it holds the rate at the 22% that we are all looking for. So on those points, we would say that we hope that the legislators take a very close look at this and not decrease the revenue sharings or increase the current rate of the PERS system right now. And we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio. Warren Cummings.
Warren Cummings, I'm the fire chief of the City of Fairbanks. And the impact on the fire department going from the 22% to the 24% would equal one firefighter's position. Because the fire department is all PERS and also the police department is PERS, so it would have a corresponding effect of one police officer's position also. Be very difficult for the City of Fairbanks to increase revenue because of the tax gap, so this would be lost revenue to the city. If you make a comparison to Anchorage, Anchorage Fire Department is about eight times the size of the Fairbanks Fire Department. So you're going to be looking at the effect on Anchorage would be about eight firefighters, beginning firefighters, which out of a engine company, which would take 9 to 12 people to operate, you could see that this would be a drastic effect on Anchorage also. Because of this, as the fire chief, I think it's my obligation to support staying at the 22% on PERS. Also like to support the $3 billion going into the retirement system deficit and to continue with no reduction in the revenue sharing. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren. Just a note for others online, if you wanted to testify regarding the 22 or the 24%, there is nothing in this bill that addresses that. That'll probably be, if the legislature is going to do that, that'll be in a separate bill at a later time. So we have someone in Juneau that wants to testify. Let's see, Patrick Marshall. Go ahead.
Afternoon.
Welcome.
My name is Patrick Marshall. I am from Craig, Alaska. I am a 16-year-old sophomore at Craig High School and a youth trainer for Alaska Youth for Environmental Action. And I am here to testify on the farm-to-school budget item, which is in the operating budget, I believe. So education in Alaska is a huge thing. I know for myself, being in high school, that I need a good education to get through life. And another also thing is nutrition. And farm-to-school provides all of this. Since people in Alaska don't really know where their food comes from in the schools, I believe that farm-to-school can actually sort of tell everybody what this is and where it comes from. There was an example of that would be that one of the schools, I don't know the name of it, they had a 90% success rate from changing their schools from an unhealthy lifestyle to a more nutritional lifestyle. So I believe that this budget item is really important for the future of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go back to, let's see, I think Fairbanks. Stand by for just a second. Back on the record, Terry Solomon in Fairbanks. Go ahead, Terry.
Good afternoon. I'm here as a retired school teacher and a community member. I'm also a volunteer with Chena Gulfstream Fire and Rescue. We have quite a large region in the Gulfstream Valley that we cover for wildland fires in addition to structure fires. I'd like to thank Senator Bishop and the DNR Budget Committee for recommending that state funds be used to backfill lost federal funding for state wildlands fire hotshot crews and initial attack crews. And I'd also like to encourage the committee to consider amending the operating budget so we could include state funding for these very important state fire crews. As a structure firefighter, we specialize in structure fires, obviously. We cross-train in wildland fire, but we really depend on our wildland firefighters to help us when something breaks up in our community. A few years ago, we had an opportunity to practice that when we had a local fire, a Moose Mountain fire in the Goldstream Valley. And without those initial attack crews that are highly trained and ready to move on a moment's notice and are here locally so that they can respond to our local fires, there's a possibility that we can lose a lot of homes and resources in our community without having those initial attack crews ready. One of the things that we have to do on wildland fires, if we don't have those crews locally, is to bring them up from the lower 48, and that costs a lot of money, and it obviously takes us several days to get them here. So I would appreciate you looking into funding those crews on a regular basis here in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Bonnie Walstead. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I would like to address the Department of Public Safety's budget and the retrofit of the PV Woolfed. I request that you include the additional 1.3, 1.6 in the public safety budget for increased operational and capital expenditures related to completing the retrofit of the and operation of the Woolfed. With Alaska's expanding role into the Arctic and anticipated pressures on our coastal villages and natural resources, it is imperative that Alaska maintains its two high endurance patrol vessels. Currently, public safety only has the two of them, the 156-foot PV Stimson and the 121-foot PV Woolstead stationed in Kodiak. Our fisheries are tied to our very existence as a state. The Alaska Statehood Movement was first and foremost about obtaining control of Alaska's natural resources. We need a clear vision of Alaska's future for the marine section's high-endurance vessels. We need to be competitive and ready for Arctic exploration. We need to be proactive, not reactive. A 58-foot limited purseiner, which was proposed as a replacement for the PV Woolstead, is not a high-endurance vessel. The Woolstead was specifically designed and built to provide public safety and fishery patrol to all Alaskan waters. Over its life, the Woolstead has patrolled in virtually all coastal and inside waters of Alaska. With its 224-foot naiads, the Woolstead is fully capable of serving as a platform for inshore fishery patrols search and rescue, firefighting, and resource user contacts. It is one of the most versatile vessels that public safety currently has. If the Wolfset were to be sold, anticipated receipts are estimated to be only $200,000. Current replacement cost estimates for the Wolfset are $18 to $20 million. In 2013, the Alaska legislature appropriated $2.4 million to retrofit the Wolfset. Instead of spending $3 million to purchase and retrofit a 58-foot seiner, we can complete the retrofit on the Wolfset and have a vessel that is operational in all areas of the state. Alaska needs to recognize its fiduciary responsibilities to our natural resources. I believe these high-endurance vessels are part of the state's responsibility to ensure and protect our original permanent fund, our Alaska's Fish and Wildlife Natural Resources. I believe the public safety said it best when they said that the department has expanded its role in the inclusion of federal joint enforcement agreements, homeland security, and boating safety enforcement concerns. This responsibility covers the largest coastline in the country. The division was arguably the widest patrol area and most complex responsibility of any single law enforcement agency in the nation. The safety of the troopers, the successful enforcement of the state regulations, and the well-being of the citizens of the state depend on this fleet. This fleet is critical to the state of Alaska and must be maintained in operational condition at all times. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. We're going to stay in Fairbanks and go to Melanie Lindholm.
Hi, thank you for letting me testify. I'm testifying today to ask that you not cut funds to the chlamydia campaign. Our state claimed the number one highest chlamydia infection rate in the U.S. for the last 7 years. We can't allow funding for the program to be eliminated before its public health benefits and long-term savings are achieved. This funding is a crucial component to preventing the spread of what is an easily treatable disease. This funding is good for the public health and good for the budget by helping with the public health impact of untreated STDs. We will not see any improvement in our state's devastatingly high chlamydia rates without this funding. I ask that you please protect Alaska's fertility and ensure that the final budget includes continued funding for the chlamydia campaign. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Melanie. Staying in Fairbanks, Gerald Brown.
Good afternoon. My name is Gerald Brown. I am in Fairbanks. I am a pharmacist. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Shark 1 and Shark 2 portions of the budget. These are loan assistance and loan repayment plans for health care providers across the state, and particularly low, where it's very hard to get health care providers into those areas. This is vital for the health care of our rural areas, and I would like to have you support that and continue that, and at least at minimum grandfather those who've already been granted loan repayments to continue to receive those, as it would disrupt or cause us to lose valuable health care providers in our state. Thank you very much for your attention.
Mr. Brown, I'll tell you what we made comment on earlier this morning when a number of people testifying about the SHARP project had gone through very professional and respectful testimony, that I think we heard your message. We actually got a letter back from the subcommittee, and I don't think I ever remember having that happen, but we got a letter back from the subcommittee before public testimony, or actually in the middle of it, recommending that we address the deficiency in the SHARP program. So for anyone on the line who anticipates testifying on that, I think the message to you is that we got the message, and stand by. Can't make any guarantees.
Thank you very much.
You bet. I'm going to go to Houston. Virgie Thompson.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. This is Mayor Virgie Thompson for the City of Houston, and I really appreciate this opportunity to testify today. The city of Houston is like many small municipalities in the state. We have limited revenue from businesses, yet we provide services for over 2,000 residents. Property taxes collected are specifically earmarked for public safety and roads to make our community a more healthy place to live. I would like to request that there's consideration for the $10 million to be restored into the revenue sharing fund. Whereas without the revenue sharing, the city would have no choice but to contribute to the unemployment rate within the state of Alaska. This basically would prompt the city to have to lay off a minimum of three of its employees. Fine-tuning perhaps what is being funded or projected to be funded through the budget of the state needs to be reconsidered and look at some of these things that are being funded that maybe don't benefit the whole state, such as specific studies or certain programs that are not in need for people that are in really need. We seem to have a lot of waste within our city, our state. So once again, thank you so much for allowing us to testify, and please do consider continuing with the revenue sharing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. We're going to go now to Palmer. Mr. Doug Griffin. Go ahead, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the city manager for the City of Palmer. I don't want to be too redundant. I, as a municipal official, just echo the earlier comments of Mayor Thompson from Houston that the cut in revenue sharing is something that would be significant and would be a significant hit for the City of Palmer budget. The City of Palmer has a very lean budget. We provide essential services, police, fire, roads. We do that with the utmost care in terms of providing good value to our residents for their tax dollars, and we need every little piece of money we can get, including the state aid we get. We would similarly be damaged if the PERS contribution was increased from the 22% to 24%. I know that's not in that bill. I understand that is something that's being kicked around. So we very much appreciate the partnership we have with the state, those state dollars that we get from revenue sharing and the payment in kind or payment in lieu of for PERS helps us to provide essential services to Alaskans. We have really no frills here. I think we provide important services to make the quality of life and the safety of our community what it is for our residents. So thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Staying in the Mat-Su area, John Cannon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Cannon. I live at 3101 Whispering Woods Drive in Wasilla. I'm here today to ask the Senate Finance Committee's support to fully fund the Complex Behavioral Collaborative, which is known as the CBC. The CBC provides training for caregivers and providers who serve people with disabilities that have challenging behaviors, such as violent behavior that results in harm to others and harm to self. I wanted to thank Senator Donnie Olson and the Senate HESC Finance Subcommittee for their good work, first of all, to understand the importance of Alaska's need for the CBC, and secondly, a big thank you to Senator Olson and his committee for their recommendation to fully fund the CBC at $525,000 for the upcoming fiscal year. I am here to tell you that the Complex Behavioral Collaborative is working. It is cost-effective. The CBC helps individuals with disabilities avoid costly institutional placement. So on behalf of these Alaskans and those who care for them, I respectfully ask the Senate Finance Committee to fully fund the Complex Behavioral Collaborative. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Rachel Greenberg.
Thank Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Rachel Greenberg. I'm the Deputy Director of MATSU Senior Services, Vice Chair of AgeNet, and I also sit on the Alaska Commission on Aging. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the operating budget, and just side note, thanks for making us feel welcome in February when we came down to visit you. In today's tough economy, I don't envy you the tough decisions you need to make in order to keep Alaska's economy healthy. It's important to ensure that the seniors and the elders in our state remain here and as happy and healthy as independent as possible. According to an ICER report that was published in 2006, Alaska seniors contribute $1.46 billion to Alaska's economy. This number is likely to increase due to the senior population growth. Therefore, the MATSU Senior Center, Coalition of MATSU Senior Centers, AgeNet, and the Commission on Aging are advocating for the lowest cost method to keep Alaska seniors in their homes and community. These low-cost options include sustainable funding for a statewide network of aging and disability resource centers. There's currently some state funds that are going to the Juneau, Kenai, Anchorage, and Dillingham aging and disability resource centers, and there's a small amount of federal funds coming to the MAT too. But there's no current aging and disability resource center in Fairbanks, North Pole, Barrow, Bethel, Kodiak, and many other areas of the state. In that too, we really have been working as a community collaborative to try to work on an aging disability resource center, and we believe that it is time that the state puts forth some of those funds to expand the aging disability resource centers in the state of Alaska. Two additional incremental increased funding requests include two longstanding senior grant programs, the Nutrition Transportation Support Services, as you heard earlier from cohort up in Fairbanks, we're asking for $545,000 incremental increase, and the Family Caregiver Support Program for a $325,000 incremental increase. Both programs have been proven to effectively prevent or delay costly institutional care. The Nutrition Transportation Support Services grant program includes meals, transportation, and local information referral services. And these services are primarily provided through local senior centers. The NTS program around the state of Alaska is serving an increasing number of seniors and striving to meet the demand for more services as the cost for personnel, fuel, and food continue to increase. Senior grants have proven to help older Alaskans remain with dignity in their own home and community. So thank you for not cutting any funding to the senior grants. Your support in maintaining and increasing funding for these critical programs will promote family self-sufficiency as well as prevent or reduce premature entry into expensive institutional care. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Robin Menard, MATSU.
Good afternoon. This is Robin Menard. I'm Director of Public Affairs at MATSU Health Foundation, and thank you so much for this opportunity to testify. I'm wanting to encourage you to maintain funding for substance abuse treatment. As you may know, substance abuse is the number one health issue in the MATSU. That was identified in a community health needs assessment we completed last year. We talked to more than 500 people at 24 community meetings and also in an online environment. And we had them vote on the top health issues, and number one absolutely was substance abuse, including amongst a meeting of our local legislators, so some of you may have been in there. Substance abuse also links to the next four highest ranked problems, which were childhood trauma, depression and suicide, access to mental health care, and domestic violence and sexual assault. And so you can see it all ties together. Substance abuse treatment is absolutely required for people. People who receive treatment can be productive members of the community versus non-productive. And substance abuse treatment heals whole families, not just the individuals who participate. So we just strongly urge you to not cut those numbers and to let those programs continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Chuck Foster.
And I'm Chuck Foster, representing the Coalition of MATSU Senior Centers. I am the Assistant Executive Director at Wasilla Area Seniors as well. And I would like to echo and support what Rachel Greenberg said just a moment ago about funding to senior grants programs in the state of Alaska. I'd like to extend the remarks just to point out that from a quantitative standpoint, a study performed in the lower 48 by Tali Thomas and Vincent Moore put some actual numbers to the benefit of supporting seniors in their home independently living as opposed to allowing them to creep into institutional care. According from the study, every additional $25 that states spend on home-delivered meals per year per person age 65 plus is associated with a decrease in low-care nurse populations of 1%. So when you consider the average cost of supporting a senior under the grants program is $427 per year, and the extremely beneficial federal-state matching formula for that spending, the cost to nursing home at $121,500 is pretty dramatic. And even though this study was performed in the lower 48, it's reasonable to believe that the benefit to the state of Alaska would be even greater. So, thank you for taking the testimony. We urge the committee to consider these beneficial spending choices. It's good for Alaskans. It's good for the long-term health of the state budget. Subject to your questions, that ends my testimony.
Thank you, Chuck. Back to Fairbanks, Diane Hutchison.
This is Diane, and I'd like to thank the committee very much for taking my testimony. I'm representing the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and I have just three main issues. We are in full support of the governor's $3 billion pay down. We think it makes sense for a long-range time value of money planning, no different from paying your home mortgage down, decreasing the cash flow for our individual homeowners, and saving the interest on down the road. So we'd like you to consider the governor's $3 billion pay down. And then I'd like to, I know this isn't specifically there, but just talk a little bit about the effect on local government if you were to increase the PERS rate from 22 to 24%. The only ones who are paying income taxes in the state of Alaska are the individuals through the municipalities, either by sales tax or property tax. And so an increase in what the state mandates that we have to pay would trickle down. And one thing that we have to contend with is the municipalities that are already at the tax cap would either have to go back to their voters, increase the cap to pay that additional share, or lay people off. If they lay people off, they could start getting hit with the PERS termination cost. So basically, I just wanted to thank you for your time and effort, and to please, if you would consider that anything that you do at the state level trickles down to the individual taxpayers, and they don't pay taxes to the state of Alaska. They only pay them to our municipalities, and we as the local government bodies are the ones who ultimately then have to tax taxpayers and not you. So appreciate your consideration, and thank you for all you do.
Thanks, Diane. John Zasada in Anchorage.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. My name is John Zazada with the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center in Anchorage, and just calling to express our support for full funding of the governor's budget for the SHARP program for the coming year. For our health center, it's a vital part of our ability to provide care for the uninsured and underserved in Anchorage. For just a little bit of perspective, prior to the SHARP program's existence, when we would lose providers, sometimes it would take us a year or more to replace providers, and that would put a severe strain on our ability to serve the uninsured and underserved. Since the program has started, we have four of our staff members in the program, getting a total of somewhere over $200,000 in loan repayment. It has lowered our turnover of providers. We are able to see new patients in the community usually within 4 to 6 days of their first appointment request, and are able to see established patients now within a day of when they call. As our practice continues to grow, again, continuing to serve primarily uninsured patients. We've just entered an agreement with the Veterans Administration to see overflow from their facility, and we'll be adding an additional 2,000 patients. And honestly, we're extremely scared of the idea that loan repayment will go away and that we will experience turnover that we used to have. And really, I wasn't expecting to speak until 2:30, so I wasn't quite ready, but again, we're just extremely anxious about this potential cut, and hope that the program can continue to operate at near full funding for the coming year.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else at the Mat-Su area, LIO, or Fairbanks, or Anchorage, that wants to testify at this time? Hearing none, we're just going to stand by for a little while, and if the LIOs fill up, then we'll take testimony at that time. So we're off the record for right now, but standing by.
We're back taking public testimony. It's about 3:35. We're going to go to the Anchorage LIO at this time, as well as Wasilla. And, oh, excuse me, it's 2:35. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. And we're going to go to Michelle Baker in Anchorage. Go ahead, Michelle.
Good afternoon, Chairman Kelly, Chairman Meyer, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Michelle Baker, and I'm the Operations Director for South Central Foundation's Behavioral Services Division. South Central Foundation provides services to more than 60,000 Alaska Native and American Indian people across the entire state. I am before you today to ask for your support to maintain funding for residential substance use treatment in Alaska. It is through these programs that we are able to continue our work to reduce the high rates of alcoholism and substance abuse in the state of Alaska. At South Central Foundation, our behavioral health offers customer owner services and programs for individuals and families of all ages. These services are integrated with other service on the Alaska Native Health Campus for whole person care and in recognition of the emotional and social dimensions of physical health. Without this funding, many of our behavioral health programs will not have the resources to meet the needs of our customer owners. One such program that may have to be closed if funding is not maintained is our Dina Coy program. Dina Coy, established in 1992, was the first residential program in the United States to allow pregnant women to come into treatment, give birth, and continue treatment with their baby placed with them right in the facility. Substance use treatment can and does save lives. As a direct consequence of drug use, 84 individuals died in Alaska in 2010. This is compared with the number of individuals who died from motor vehicle accidents, 71, and firearms, 144 in the same year. In addition, there is strong correlation between alcohol and drug abuse and suicide. One study identified that alcohol and drug abuse disorders are associated with a risk of 6.2 times greater than the average risk of suicide attempts. Numerous studies have also shown that substance abuse treatment reduces recidivism rates for those involved with the criminal justice system. One Alaska Department of Corrections study found a 9% recidivism rate among those who received substance abuse treatment versus 37% who did not. A similar study of therapeutic courts in Alaska found that those who graduate from their treatment program had much lower rearrest and reconviction rates than those that did not graduate. I would like to thank the members of the subcommittee, Chairman Senator Olson, Senator McGuire, Senator Coghill, Senator Gardner, for recognizing the value of these services. And I want to encourage the entire Finance Committee to adopt the subcommittee's recommendation and encourage the Senate members hold firm on their position during the conference committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of South Central Foundation and the 60,000 American Indian Alaska Native customer owners that we serve. We would appreciate your support for maintaining funding for the already limited number of residential substance use treatment programs in Alaska, because without this much-needed funding, many of our most vulnerable people will go without the treatment they need in order to achieve wellness. Thank you for the ability to speak to you this afternoon.
Thank you, Michelle. Christopher Truitt.
Hello. My name is Christopher Truitt, and I'm a resident of Anchorage. It has been brought to my attention that the Youth Job Center will not receive funding according to the House budget that was recently passed. And I just wanted an opportunity to say that I think it is one of the most important resources for teens in our city. The Anchorage School District this year lost their career counselors, and the Department of Labor's Youth Job Center has been a great resource for teens to find jobs now and to plan careers for their future. And I think it's something that we value and should hold on to. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. Joshua Franks.
Good afternoon.
Commission. I'm Joshua Franks, and I'm Manager of Development at South Central Foundation, and I'm here to ask today for your support for full funding for the governor's budget for both SHARP programs. The SHARP provider contracts programs as components of the Alaska healthcare system that provide access to healthcare for our most vulnerable state, for the most vulnerable in our state. Right now, currently, South Central Foundation serves more than 60,000 Alaska Native and American Indians living in the state of Alaska. The SHARP program allows SCF to recruit and retain many of the hard to fill positions by providing these services. These are physicians, RNs, PACs, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, dentists, and many others who are seeking loan repayment and considered an integral part of their decision as to where they practice. Of these positions, SCF has 14 participating providers, and 6 of whom participate in the SHARP Option 2, in which SCF shares 25% of the cost of loan repayment to these providers. I appreciate your support for full funding of the governor's budget for both SHARP programs. This loan repayment program allows us to continue to bring more good jobs to the state of Alaska and is designed to improve healthcare access for Alaskans who have other substantial barriers to healthcare access, such as living in rural areas, receive Medicaid, Medicare, or other federal health benefits, or are otherwise uninsured and lack the access to health care. Thank you so much for providing me this opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Franks. We're going to go to the Wasilla LIO now and then come back to Anchorage. There's Linda Conover.
Linda Conover, and I want to say a special hello to my senator, Senator Dunleavy. I co-chair the Imagination Library in the MATSU, and I'm in Anchorage today, so I didn't want to miss the opportunity to thank you for not cutting funding to early learning and the best beginnings. I have to share something with you. At our last event, a mother came up to me. She was so thankful that we had the Imagination Library program, and she expressed that her daughter was so excited when she got books every month. But she had to go to the library now every week because her daughter wanted her to read to her all the time. Well, to me, this was a big plus. I love to see kids so excited about learning. In fact, one of the top readiness skills for learning in kindergarten is an enthusiasm for learning. Number 2 is solid oral language skills. You can help build oral language skills by taking your child to many places, but books can take you everywhere. And number 3 in the top readiness skills is an ability to listen. When we tell them a story, they listen. When we ask them what the words said, they can tell us. And the desire to be independent is another top readiness skill for kindergarten. The ability to play with others, that's why the Imagination Library has added events that we put on all around the state to encourage children in group play and to interact. And number 6 top readiness skill would be basic letter and number recognition. I know that the statewide Imagination Library reaches 40% of the children under 5 in the state, and our Matsu Borough reaches 48% now, and we grow every month. If we figure the state, if we add 5,000 children this year at $30 a children, that would be an additional $150,000. I think we're going to easily increase the Imagination Libraries around the state by 5,000, and I'd like you to make a note right now to add $150,000 to early learning. Please support our kids and our wonderful board of volunteers and I from the MATSU. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Carl Garber in Anchorage.
I am Carl Garber, Executive Director of Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. We provide services statewide to improve the quality of life for frail elders and for those with Alzheimer's disease and related disorders and their family caregivers. Our services include education, support groups, care planning, and in-home care. First, I'd like to thank the legislature for continuing the current funding levels to the senior community grant programs. I would also like to testify in support of expanding funding of the National Family Caregiver Support Program. This program provides respite training and support for family caregivers. Family caregivers provide the majority of in-home care for their loved ones. It is important that these caregivers are also healthy so that they can continue to provide this care. As reported in the Alzheimer's Association's Facts and Figures Report for 2013, in Alaska, 33,000 caregivers provided 37 million hours of unpaid care to their loved ones, and the value of this was $459 million. Also, Alaskan caregivers are more likely to experience health issues related to caregiving and utilize higher levels of health care. This program gives caregivers the information, education, and support needed to maintain care in their home setting for as long as possible. There is a significant body of evidence that demonstrates the effectiveness of these services. For example, research conducted by NYU's Mary Nettleman over the course of a 17-year study demonstrated that custom-trained caregivers kept their loved ones out of nursing homes an average of 1.5 years longer than untrained caregivers. Providing support programs so that frail elders and those with Alzheimer's disease can remain living safely in their homes is good for a number of reasons, including it saves the state funds as the cost of in-home care is much less than facility-based care. It reduces high-cost emergency room visits. It helps family caregivers to remain healthy so that they can continue to provide unpaid care for their loved ones. This also reduces their health care costs. We need to expand the funding of the National Family Caregiver Support Program because of its value it provides. And also, in Alaska, seniors are the fastest growing segment of the population. According to the Alaska Population Projections 2010 through 2035 report prepared by the Alaska Department of Labor, dated April 2012, the 60-plus population is expected to increase 25% from 2015 to 2020, and then continue to grow rapidly through 2035. That concludes my comments, but if you have a couple minutes, I'd like to read a letter from Bill Powell of Wasilla, who received services from us under the program. It takes less than 2 minutes to read.
Go ahead, Mr. Garber.
Thank you. I'm writing to let you know about my appreciation for the services of Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. I have been going to the support groups for about 5 years and can tell you that they have really made a big help to me. Being with other people who are going through or have gone through the same issues that I am also going through is a real encouragement to me. I have learned a number of things that help me in the day-to-day care of my wife and gain knowledge on how to handle different situations that come up in our home. I have also gained an understanding of the things to expect in the future as my wife's condition continues to go downhill as it relates to her memory. The various people who oversee the support groups and even the ones who attend have given me suggestions and directed me to other services that have helped me and will continue to help me as time goes on. They pointed out to me the need to get on the waiting list for an assisted living home so it would be available should my wife need one. If it gets too difficult for me to manage her. They also helped me to understand my wife and what she is going through and how to divert the conversation to other topics. The most important was the confirmation that love and humor are two of the most important things to maintain around the house. The respite care services has also been a real blessing to me. I did not realize how important it was just to get out of the house for periods of time to relax and spend some quiet time by myself. It is good knowing that I have a set schedule and can look forward to those times and even plan some things to do for myself or to meet someone for coffee or lunch. And finally, just knowing that there are people available to me should I find myself in a hard place or to seek advice concerning an issue at home or with the care of my wife. People such as yourself who are available to provide education and support and to guide me in the right direction. Thank you for all that the association has to offer for caregivers like me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garber. Tammy Williamson, Anchorage as well.
Hello.
Hello, Tammy.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
I'm speaking on behalf of Youth First. I'm speaking as a mother, as a neighbor, as a concerned citizen. I'm a career guide at the Youth Job Center, so I do have some knowledge about the kind of services that we offer. Youth First is statewide, but because my knowledge is limited to more in Anchorage, I'm going to talk about that also because I have limited time. Last year, we served over 6,000 youth with various services. We helped over 1,800 create resumes. I run into youth, you know, in various places around town that we've helped get employment, whether it's Fred Meyer or Bell's Nursery or when I'm buying my car. One youth told me, hey, you helped me at the Military Youth Academy, and now I'm the top salesman. He was very proud of himself. I've been working for the Youth Job Center for 4 years. One of the things that impressed me the most with going in there is the connections that these career guides that we can have with people in the community. A lot of times when you get a job, it's because you know somebody. And because of the Youth Job Center, any youth, whatever their economic or social background is, they can walk in and they instantly know somebody who knows hiring managers across the city from Providence to CH2M Hill to JCPenney's. So if the youth impresses us with their skills and their abilities, then we can talk to that employer and put in a good word for them. And employers appreciate that because they are desperate for good workers. These youth have skills, and they just need these connections. And often they don't have these connections, you know, with their own family. Youth that we interact with have skills and certifications, whether it's the CNA or carpentry skills. They just don't know how to put together a resume very well. They don't know how to interview. And we all know that's key if you're going to actually get into a position. We tell them the interview is really what gets you the job. So we provide that bridge to help them be gainfully employed. And in areas that they're interested in areas that can be a career pathway. If they don't get this kind of support, then, you know, they'll have a harder time getting these jobs. And where are they going to be? You know, best case scenario, maybe they're playing video games or hanging out in the mall. Unfortunately, youth can get involved in negative things. So we like to provide that hope and that pathway to their future. We're also helping to create workers who can get a livable wage. I tell thousands of kids every year, your high school diploma is really important, but it's not enough. You need more training if you want to earn a living wage in Anchorage. My coworkers are amazing. Cheryl, she's been working in multiple industries and human resources for 20 years. Sean's been helping Alaskans go to work for 18 years. They're both passionate. Sean's been helping the many construction institutes where we have students getting credentials like North Slope Training Card and Forklift Safety. Cheryl's helping 1,500 youth at the King Career Center put their resumes together. We also work with McLaughlin, the Military Youth Academy, at Covenant, with Office of Children's Services, multiple places. So please, you know, invest in our youth. We believe in them, and we know that you do too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go to the Juno. Committee room here, we have some people that want to testify, and specifically someone that has an appointment coming up. Mr. Ron Wilson, would you come up and testify?
Thank you very much. My name is Ron Wilson, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan, married, father of four, IBEW electrician. And I mention all that because most of my life I've been a productive contribution to society, but in 2002 I received my third DUI offense, and that made me a felon forever. And up until then I hadn't been able to address my issues, but I was accepted to the therapeutic court, wellness court, and it allowed me the opportunity to get the treatment that I needed to address the issues and help me identify the issues of my alcohol and drug use. And what I learned was that I was medicating anxiety disorder, and that enabled me to address those issues. The therapeutic court allowed me to get back home, get back to work, and with the presumptive sentencing guidelines, it saved me from going to jail and prison for probably approximately 5 to 6 years. I've gotten back and been a positive contribution to society. I'm giving back to my community. I'm a member of the Alaska Therapeutic Alumni Group, which is nationally recognized as one of the most powerful and successful alumni groups in all the 4,000 drug courts in the nation. And I sit on a few different boards, and I just ask that you would all continue to support treatment, reentry programs, and not do any of the cuts on the Senate Bill, House Bill 266. And I appreciate your support in the SB 64 bill, and just ask that you would continue to help that get the provisions it needs. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ron. Ron, you came in with some people. Are you guys kind of going together to different offices? So let's just go get through all four of you if you want to testify. Yeah.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Elaine Vroman. I'm with Meeting the Challenge from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm also a voice for recovery. I got my first DUI in 1982. I was kind of wellness court before wellness court was invented. I had a wonderful judge that helped me see things in a different light. And you should recommend a treatment. Treatment works. People need sometimes those challenges in life and don't see any other way except getting into treatment. I grew up with a mother that was angry and turned to Valium and martinis. When my dad died, he was 33 and I was 8 years old, so I was raised pretty much by my grandparents, and things were different in those days, and we didn't talk about feelings, and everybody stuffed everything, and everybody was just angry. So by the time I was in high school, I turned to drugs and alcohol as an escape, and I traveled a lot and kept, you know, moving. So wherever you are, there you are, though, eventually. And I hit a snowplow on in a blackout one night in Breckenridge, Colorado, and that was the beginning of my journey. So please do not cut House Bill 266. Treatment works. We need to keep the alcohol tax going towards substance abuse. I've also worked in the field. I've seen where many people's lives have been changed. And I worked in the felony DUI court for a while with the Wellness Center. I work with mental health court now, and treatment works. And we just need your support. And please maybe look towards keeping that alcohol tax going towards substance abuse treatment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too.
My name is Arlene Ludwig. I'm from the Anchorage area. I'm a product of treatment, coming out of treatment for drug abuse, substance abuse. I'm in long-term recovery. I'm down here with a wonderful group of people called Meeting the Challenge. We're here advocating for to keep money in the behavior health and the treatment facilities. And I want to thank you guys for supporting keeping the monies in so that more of us can recover. I know it's really important. The drug system really affects a lot of every one of us in this state, and it's really important that I think that treatment money should stay where they are, and if we can get more money, that would be totally awesome. I also, not only do I represent my district in Anchorage, I'm a registered voter. I also represent the Noon District, which I am originally from. I grew up in a village with about 300 people, 200 at the time, and there was a lot of drinking and not so much drugs, but now, the drugs that are coming through are a lot more potent. There's a lot of heroin that's increased. So I really would ask your support to keep the monies in the treatment behavioral health system. Thanks.
Thank you, Arlene. Appreciate it. Michael?
My name is Michael Meradian, and I'm a resident and registered voter in Chugiak, Alaska. I'm a substance abuse counselor, have been for the last 10 years. I see directly every day the impact that recovery has on communities, families, emergency services, the reduction in recidivism. Addiction is the problem and recovery is the solution. And if you want to take money away from substance abuse, then you're going to need to put more money towards more prisons. It's a fact. Everyone in our legislature knows the numbers. It's cheaper to treat than to house. Taking that money away is not a solution. It's a move that's going to create more problems down the road. So I would advocate that any consideration of taking money away from residential treatment, outpatient treatment, or any treatment of any sort is a problem creator, not a problem solver decision. I myself also have been able to positively impact the people that I treat because I myself am a Wellness Court graduate. Wellness courts are the best model for substance abuse and the reduction of recidivism. I'm also the co-founder of the Alumni Association for Therapeutic Court in Anchorage. This is proven. The numbers are there. The numbers don't lie. Substance abuse treatment money equals lives. And this is a fact. We all know it. I just hope that people will understand the long-term impact that reducing these funds will have. And I'm going to be the one that's going to have to look in the eyes of the mothers and fathers and children of these people and tell them, because I'm already telling them, I'm sorry, I can't provide you treatment services. There's a waiting list. So please know that this money equals lives, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go back to Anchorage, and I'm not exactly sure the first name. The last name is McClintock. Are you there?
Hi, yes. Good afternoon, Senator Meyer and Kelly and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And my name is Keenan McClintock, and I'm representing myself. I'm a constituent in Senate District L. And I am testifying today to urge you to reinstate the funding that is already promised to Alaskans for the third year of the chlamydia campaign. As you know, Alaska is consistently ranked number one or two for the highest chlamydia rates in the nation. And the last 2 years of funding have already helped to raise awareness about the importance of getting tested for chlamydia and made it possible for many people in our state to access high quality and affordable testing and treatment. I think that if we cut funding now, we will be losing the opportunity to see the benefits of the full 3 years of funding. This is especially upsetting as we are currently facing an epidemic of gonorrhea and syphilis in Alaska. And there are just 2 points that I want to emphasize today. First, we know that early diagnosis and treatment is essential to preventing infertility that can result from untreated chlamydia. However, many people do not show symptoms of this infection, which means that they don't get treated and can thus spread the infection to others. Raising awareness about the importance of getting tested saves us money, both public dollars and out-of-pocket costs for Alaskans, by preventing the spread of further disease and by preventing the need for costly treatments resulting from complications from untreated sexually transmitted infections. Quite literally, treatment is prevention. The second thing is I wanted to say that I've been lucky enough to spend the last several weeks working with young people between the ages of 17 and 22 and learning and hearing about their experiences and opinions about sexuality education. And one thing that I've taken away from those last few weeks is that I'm continually shocked by how many of those teens report that they or their peers do not know what chlamydia is, or that it can be asymptomatic, or the importance of regular testing, or where they can go for affordable testing. So I think that we especially need this continued funding so that we can educate the young people in our state who already face disproportionate barriers to quality and affordable health care. Nationally, young people between 13 and 24 make up the majority of new infections for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And I think that while there are endless statistics that I could tell you to support this funding, frankly, for me, hearing the teens talk about this issue and knowing that a percentage of them could face infertility later in life as a result of insufficient education and funding for these kinds of programs is as much reasoning as I need. So with that, I urge you to put the funding back in the budget, and I thank you very much for your time, Senators.
Thank you. Staying in the Anchorage LIO, Jessica Claire. Claire.
Hello. Thank you, Chairman Kelly and Chairman Meyer and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jessica Clare, and I'm the Alaska Public Affairs Manager with Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest. I'm also a lifelong Alaskan and current resident of Anchorage. Planned Parenthood operates 5 health centers across Alaska, and in 2012 we served nearly 12,000 people in the state with life-saving and cost-saving reproductive health care, including contraception, cancer and disease screenings, exams, and abortions. I am here to ask that you reinstate the $360,000 that was stripped from the budget for the final year of the chlamydia campaign. As has already been mentioned, Alaska is facing an STI crisis. Not only has our state claimed the highest chlamydia infection rate in the U.S. for the last 7 years, we're also facing a recent outbreak of gonorrhea and syphilis. Targeted intervention programs like the chlamydia campaign are a proven solution. Eliminating the funding for the program's third year is like pulling out the rug when this is just ramping up before all its public health benefits and long-term savings have been achieved. This funding is a crucial component to preventing the spread of what is an easily treatable disease, and it's good for public health and good for the budget. Chlamydia, a bacterial infection transmitted through unprotected sexual contact, is easily treatable once detected. The problem is that many people do not show any symptoms, and when left untreated, it causes silent and complicated infections in the reproductive organs. It is the number one cause of pelvic inflammatory disease, which can lead to serious health problems, including infertility, ectopic pregnancy, abscess formation, and chronic pelvic pain. The costs of ignoring this public health issue are huge. In the U.S., direct medical costs associated with STIs are estimated at $14.1 billion annually. And the public health impact of untreated STIs is enormous. Since chlamydia and gonorrhea are frequently co-occurring infections, efforts to reduce the chlamydia rate will also help alleviate our state's gonorrhea epidemic. The first 2 years of funding have already helped implement a public awareness media campaign, testing, and treatment for patients and their partners. We will not see any improvement in our state's high chlamydia rates without this funding, so I respectfully ask the committee to ensure that a final budget includes continued funding for the chlamydia campaign. Thank you.
Thank you. Abby Hansen? Abby, are you in the... Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Abby Hens of the Best Beginnings. I'd like to thank you for your support of young children and early learning during this session, for Head Start, Pre-K, Parents as Teachers, and Best Beginnings. Best Beginnings, as many of you know, provides information and resources for families with young children in several ways, but I want to talk today about Dolly Parton's Imagination Library in Alaska. With your support, Best Beginnings is providing matching funding, training, and lots of assistance to 30 volunteer-run Imagination Library affiliates that enable more than 21,600 children under 5 in 110 communities to receive a free, age-appropriate, high-quality book in the mail each month at no cost to their family. The cost is $30 per year per child and is funded through contributions from individuals, businesses, foundations, and the state. I'd like to share a personal example of this leveraged funding. Just this last Monday, our 11th grandchild was born here in Anchorage. As I looked through the information the hospital provided to my son and daughter-in-law, I was happy to see an Imagination Library brochure so they could sign Timothy up. This hospital is a partner with Best Beginnings. 40% of the children in Alaska who are under the age of 5 are now adding at least one book a month to their home library. Now, why is this important to a child's future? Well, recently I came across some information on access to books in a 2010 publication called Research in Social Stratification and Mobility. I'd like to share with you 3 statements. Just the mere presence of books profoundly impacts a child's academic achievement. Each additional book yields more bang for your buck among the book poor than among the book rich. The greatest impact of book access occurs among the least educated and poorest families. While we can move the needle here in Alaska from 40% of children to 50%, the level of participation in Tennessee, where Dolly Parton started the program, by adding 5,000 children at a cost of $150,000. I encourage you to consider increasing funding by that amount, as Linda Conover had commented earlier. I thank you for your continuing support of our work to mobilize people and resources to ensure all Alaska children begin school ready to succeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Abby. Karen Schaff.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Schaff. I'm the Vice President of Treatment Services for Volunteers of America, Alaska. I wanted to take the opportunity to thank the Senate Finance Committee and the Finance Subcommittee for maintaining existing levels of funding for residential substance abuse treatment and substance abuse grants. Thank you so much for recognizing the value of these services. I was so happy to hear the Meeting the Challenges folks testify just recently, as they are walking proof that treatment services are necessary and valuable. Volunteers of America, Alaska provides a full continuum of care, outpatient to residential, for adolescents ages 13 to 18 with substance use disorders and co-occurring mental health disorders. We are one of the very few residential treatment centers for youth, and we serve youth statewide. In accordance to evidence-based practices, the treatment intensity and level of care is matched to the needs of the individual in order to produce successful outcomes. The majority of the youth who serve in our residential programs have been in multiple outpatient programs, have complex mental health issues, often engage in illegal behaviors, and may pose a threat to themselves and others in the community. They also show up in our emergency rooms due to their life-threatening alcohol and drug abuse. Access to residential services and other levels of care help decrease their mental health symptoms, to include suicidal ideation, eliminates their substance abuse, decreases their involvement in the legal system, and increases their ability to be safe, productive members of our society and our community. I urge you to maintain the current levels of funding for these critical substance abuse treatment programs. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Douglas Pace in Talkeetna.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't have a whole lot to say. This isn't what I thought that it was at first, but the conflict, the behavioral conflict of the House Bill 266 and 267 is what I was just trying to give support in that area. I live with a brain injury, and I lost my brother to some of that, and because he was an alcoholic, and I just was hoping there'd be no cuts in the funding, and I was just trying to give my support.
Thank you, Mr. Pace. We appreciate it.
And thank you very much.
And this is the appropriate time to do that, so thank you again. Leanne Carruthers in Anchorage.
Good afternoon. My name is Leanne Carruthers, and I'm the president of the Alaska Physical Therapy Association. Physical therapists are highly educated, licensed healthcare professionals who can help patients reduce pain and improve or restore mobility. In many cases, without extensive surgery, and often reducing the need for long-term use of prescription medications and their side effects. Physical therapy systems provide PT services under the direction and supervision of a licensed PT, and PT services are a vital part of what's necessary in medical care to keep our patients healthy and functioning independently in their communities. As PTs and PTAs who work in Alaska, we are aware of the difficulties Alaska healthcare institutions serving rural residents the uninsured and persons with mental illness have recruiting and retaining qualified licensed healthcare providers. Many facilities that provide PT are heavily dependent upon traveling staff, as reflected in an American Physical Therapy Association study that reported that only 38% of the PTs and PTAs that are licensed to practice in the state actually live here. The current employer cost for traveling PTs and PTAs is currently twice that of a therapist employed by the facility. Becoming a PT necessitates devoting a significant amount of time to education and is not unusual for PTs to begin their careers with a significant debt load. SHIP funding helps alleviate some of that burden and encourages PTs to practice in the underserved communities that need them the most. SHARP 2 grant recipients have called the grants they've received life-changing and not reduce their debt but allow them to provide care to the Alaskan families to serve. The SHARP 2 program is only 2 years old, and in this time period, the program has been able to draft and adopt regulations, distribute information about the program, and approve 90 healthcare providers for loan repayments. We are concerned about the proposed cut in funding for current and future SHARP 2 grant recipients for the following reasons. One, vulnerable Alaskans currently receiving healthcare may lose their provider. Two, 39 recently selected and recommended provider service agreements by the SHARP Advisory Council cannot be made. Three, some or all of the 62 SHARP 2 clinicians with current service agreements may lose funding on the entire or a portion of the support for their service agreements. The Alaska Physical Therapy Association members support and ask for real full funding of the governor's budget for both SHARP 1 and 2 programs in order to live up to the promises made to grant recipients and honor the contracts already executed and signed. If this vital program is in danger of being cut altogether, we ask that the 90 current recipients be grandfathered into the program so as not to lose the critical health care services they provide to the people of Alaska. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to testify on behalf of this important program.
Thank you, Leanne. Is it Patricia Center in Anchorage?
This is Patricia Center with the Alaska Nurses Association, and I want to say I'm calling in support of the SHARP 2 program as well. I know from nursing that many of the rural areas in the state are heavily dependent on travelers, and many of our behavioral health service providers such as API have a lot of trouble maintaining nursing staff. At one point, API had $2 million in overtime for nurses, which included an aide that helped the nurses. And API staff and nurses, psychiatrists, and other staff have been recipients of the SHARP 2 grants that have been given in the past 2 years. There's been some controversy about whether these grants went to the people that they were supposed to go to. In the first round, 72% of the grants went to rural providers. And in the second round, 87% of these grants went to providers. Many of the grants that didn't go to rural providers went to providers in urban areas that were providing behavioral health services. In a hearing yesterday in House Hess, it was brought out that many of the most severe vacancy problems in the state are in the behavioral health system. We would like to request that you reinstate the $1.2 million that was cut from the governor's budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Shirley Marquardt in Unalaska.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. Boy, you have a huge task ahead of you with the operating budget this year and some really big challenges with the costs of the state trying to do business and municipalities trying to do business just constantly rising, much of it not of our making, but we do have to deal with it. And I just want to make sure that you know that many of us who are part of the municipality, elected officials or city managers, we do understand that we are in this together. We're all together. And there are going to be some winners and some losers. We do understand that. My concern at this point is that for many municipalities, It's kind of a double whammy if you look at removing $10 million of revenue funding and then also raising the PERS TERS payments up to, I believe, 24%. You're losing money on the one hand and being asked to pay more on the other. And the whole PERS and TERS issue, it's huge. It's the 900-pound gorilla in the corner. And I further, you know, hope that you support the governor's plan to take $3 billion, I'm sorry, and set that aside in the fund just to pay down that huge debt. It just seems to be growing out of control. And I know that there's some thought that we should keep that money available in case we needed to spend it somewhere else. But I would argue it's already spent. It's been promised to employees, whether they are current or have already retired. And, you know, again, at this point, it's almost moot how we got to the point where the payment was so huge. It is what it is. So in everything that you're doing, and I know everybody who's calling in is asking you to please save the funding for a program or service or something that they feel very strongly about, feel that's very positive, that you just remember municipalities. We may seem to be coming with our hands out to you much of the time, but it's kind of, it's our partnership. We are partners with the states. And we are going to work as well as we can with the state, with our legislators and the governor's office to get through these issues. But removing a portion of revenue sharing and raising PERS payments at the same time is kind of difficult for us to understand. So, again, I appreciate your time today, and I really do appreciate the job you have ahead of you. So thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. I just, for the record, this is Elaine Dahlgren with Volunteers of America calling from Anchorage. Was that Shirley? Oh, excuse me.
Shirley.
Yes, you're right. Shirley Marquardt, Unalaska, Mayor of Unalaska. Now, Elaine Dahlgren with Volunteers of America in Anchorage. Go ahead, Elaine.
Thank you. My name is Elaine Dahlgren, and I'm the CEO of Volunteers of America, Alaska. Volunteers of America provides residential and outpatient substance abuse and mental health treatments for adolescents with an array of very serious needs. First, I want to thank the members of the Senate subcommittee, Chairman Olson, Senator McGuire, Senator Coghill, and Senator Gardner, for recognizing the value of treatment services. Now I ask the entire Finance Committee to adopt the subcommittee's recommendations and encourage that the Senate members hold firm to their position during the conference committee. Cutting funding for residential substance abuse treatment or any substance abuse treatment in the state of Alaska, when Alaska continues to have extremely high rates of alcoholism and substance abuse disorder, seems to be an inappropriate action to take at this time. Residential substance abuse treatment costs much less than prison, and the new prison is already filled. Treatment supports people reentering the community after incarceration or entering the community after juvenile justice and in developing successful skills for staying clean and sober. Timely access to treatment is critical, and with long waiting periods for treatment beds, it can be a deterrent in getting treatment when ready. Lives are lost in that manner. By serving people early or when they're ready, the state saves spending dollars for more costly services down the road. Those services are corrections, juvenile justice, Office of Children's Service, emergency rooms, and many, many more services that are more costly than treatment. Substance abuse is a major contributing factor to Alaska's high rates of DUI, domestic violence, and many other crimes. Increased access to treatment is needed, not less treatment. Please do not cut the substance abuse treatment budget for our state at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. Appreciate your testimony. At this time, I just ask if there are any more people in LIOs that are signed up to testify. If you haven't been given an opportunity to testify, please come forward. Apparently there are no more, but that we have testimony open until 4 o'clock, so I'm going to take a brief at ease here, or at an ease, until we get some more testifiers, and we'll come back, and if there are none, we will adjourn at 4. Okay. We're back on the record, and we're continuing with public testimony on HB 266 and HB 267. We're going to go to the Homer area for public testimony, and the first up is Angela Doroff. Angela, go ahead. Take about 3 minutes if you could.
Thank you. Angela Doroff, and for the record, I'm an employee of the Ketchikan Bay Research Reserve through ADF&G Sport Fish Division, but today I'm speaking with you as from the perspective of a private citizen. The reserve is made up of NOAA, which is Ocean and Coastal Resource Management, the State of Alaska, and a council of local community members. All three partners are essential for the mission of the reserve for it to succeed. I want to thank all of the people who committed time and tireless energy to put the funding for the reserve back into the state budget. I encourage you to honor that hard work and keep the funding in the budget, which will be matched by a large sustaining grant from NOAA. When fully funded, the reserve provides education, outreach, research results, training to serve the public, schools, coastal decision makers, natural resource agencies in the state of Alaska. Just as an example of this, in 2003, the education program served over 4,000 students, teachers, and visiting public. We also outreached vital information on harvested species, and those 4,000 students were from all over, including Anchorage area. The coastal training program reached over 400 coastal professionals by providing targeted needs-based training, such as ArcGIS training to ADF&G biologists in the Lower Kenai Peninsula as one example. The research program provided information requested by coastal decision makers on sea level change, coastal erosion, and ocean circulation patterns. Additional ongoing studies of great interest to the community are habitat requirements for juvenile salmon, clam and crab life history information, monitoring harmful algal blooms, and marine invasive species. I thank our local representatives in the Kenai Peninsula, the City of Homer, and our Reserve Community Council for their tireless work in putting the state funding for the reserve back into the budget. I ask that you please honor all of that hard work and allow the reserve to continue to serve the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. George Matz from Fritz Creek.
My name is George Matz. I'm chair of the Ketchikan Bay Research Reserve Community Council. I want to thank the Senate Finance Fish and Game Subcommittee for putting back in $175,000 into the budget, which is really critical in terms of the future operation of the Ketchikan Bay Research Reserve. I'd like to, Angie gave a good overview of just all the positive things the Research Reserve does. I just like to mention what, by having this money back in the budget, what is avoided. The $175,000 is a crucial state match for the NOAA funding, which is amounts to several hundred thousand dollars. Without that match, we would not get that NOAA funding. The NOAA funding with that then money would be split up amongst the other National Estuary Research Reserves throughout the country. So it would just be Alaska would be totally left out of the picture. By having the NOAA funding drop out, then also some other grants which are dependent on this for operation, they fall apart too, and this becomes essential in terms of during the summer we have researchers and interns and graduate students visiting from all over the country to participate in the research. None of that can go on, and the it creates this domino effect. And one thing that could happen also is that without the ability for Ketchikan Bay Research Reserve to stay alive, that threatens our participation in the Islands and Ocean Visitor Center, which is a very popular tourist area. So the Department of Fish and Game submitted some questions to NOAA recently and asking what are the consequences of KBR having to close down and then not being able to fulfill its contractual obligations with NOAA regarding the facility. And so the consequences could be fairly severe, but NOAA, in response to the question, the question was, what are ADF&G's contractual and or financial obligations to NOAA that might affect our desire to seek an alternative partner for KBR or to terminate the partnership? NOAA's response was, Should ADF&G fail to meet the terms of the 2006 MOA or fail to find an alternative state agency to transfer partnership responsibilities to them, then the state of Alaska may be responsible for reimbursing NOAA the current fair market value of previous investments in KBNER real property as set in, a certain statute. NOAA made significant investments in facilities for the KBNER building, including Alaska Islands and Ocean Visitor Center, the Modular Lab, storms, and storage facilities. Time is up, but anyhow, so there's a lot of unintended consequences if this funding is not there, and it could amount to in the order of millions of dollars. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rance. Jill Lush.
My name is Jill Lush, and I'm the Executive Director of Sprout Family Services in Homer, Alaska. We serve over 300 children living on the southern Kenai Peninsula and the Aleutian Islands. I'm speaking today in part in this role, but also as a lifelong Alaskan. I'm asking this committee to support the governor's budget as written to include fully funding parents as teachers. I am one of many Alaskans who support investing in children in order to strengthen our state. Approving the governor's budget with support for parents as teachers means that our state is strengthened with increased partnerships through connecting parents to supports and fostering parent engagement and leadership in schools and community organizations. Parents as teachers is a great service delivery model that aligns well with the governor's recent initiative about education. Parents are a child's first and most important teacher. But research tells us that this important teaching doesn't happen when a child goes to school or even preschool. It starts from birth. Additionally, support for parents as teachers makes financial sense. Parents as teachers have proven outcomes in supporting a child to be ready for school and ready for life, leading to a major return on investment. Research from James Heckman out of the University of Chicago claims that doing so can produce a 7 to 10% return on investment. I'm also here in support of Best Beginnings Imagination Library. We have almost 300 children on the southern Kenai Peninsula receiving one free book in the mail every month. Going into homes where some families cannot afford toys and equipment for their children is tough, but walking into these homes and seeing a shelf full of books is amazing. Please support this budget with Best Beginnings so all children have the chance to read. Again, please support the governor's budget as written to include fully funding parents as teachers and Best Beginnings. Invest now, have to pay later.
Thank you, Ms. Lush. Katie Koester or Kester?
Good afternoon, Katie Kester. I'm with the City of Homer. Thank you so much for taking the time this afternoon. I hope to be brief. The City of Homer has 3 points. I'd like to stress that. Number one, we join with many municipalities of Alaska in advocating for full funding of revenue sharing. The City of Homer uses this funding for basic operations. The second point I'd like to stress is the City of Homer is very appreciative of the funding the state has contributed over the years to help municipalities with the staggering cost of PERS obligations. We are supportive of transferring $3 billion to the Retirement Trust to be able to continue to ensure dependable and consistent payments for municipalities. And the third item is closer to home, and really a big thank you to the Senate Finance Fish and Game Subcommittee and the Senate Finance Committee for keeping funding for Kachemak Bay Research Reserve in the fish and game budget. The reserve is an economic engine for our community and highly valued in the city, so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kester. Stacy Bucklow?
Hi, I'm Stacy Bucklow. For the record, I am an employee of the Kachemak Bay Research Reserve through the ADF&G Sport Fish Division, and I'm speaking today from the perspective of a private citizen. I want to thank you and your staff for your support and leadership to preserve the funding levels for the reserve under the ADF&G portion of the... I got cut off there. I want to thank you and your staff for your support and leadership of the reserve under the sport fish portion of the operating budget. I want to encourage you to maintain this funding amendment in the budget as you close out. Cutting the reserve from the budget, in my opinion, is a narrow-sighted decision. The $175,000 is the entirety of the state match required to receive larger federal funds from NOAA and other sources. The multiplier effect of this match brings in over $1 million in federal funding through Sportfish, for which a 14% administrative fee is applied for all incoming funding that offsets the general fund applied to the reserve. I want to stress that if the match were cut, this is not just a slash in the budget. It will result in complete closure of the reserve and would have significant financial strings for the state of Alaska. Sportfish would default on their agreement terms with NOAA, as mentioned by Chair George Matz, and could be responsible for reimbursing the current fair market value of reserve property investments, including a portion of the Alaska Islands and Oceans Visitor Center, the modular facility, and Bay Avenue Labs. This amount is likely to be the millions of dollars. Further, using federal funds, reserve contributes over $130,000 annually to the operation of the Islands and Oceans Visitor Center, which serves about 75,000 visitors per year. There is currently no alternative building partner that could fulfill that obligation. In closing, I encourage you to preserve the $175,000 in the budget under AADF&G for the reserve. With this funding, the state is able to leverage larger money from federal grants that has a community-wide multiplier benefiting youth and adult education, fisheries, infrastructure, and tourism. Additionally, this continuation would prevent further significant debt by the state of Alaska by alleviating the potential responsibility for property investment by BEC. Thank you.
Brian Zach.
Well, Representative Kelly and Senators Dunleavy and Faircloth, appreciate your service. It's like a beautiful day is down in Juneau as well as it is here in Homer. I have a couple of short comments just today, and that's my main points are the $10 million. I'd like to see that back into the revenue sharing fund, and also the governor's $3 billion cash infusion into the PERS pension fund in order to keep payments at a dependable level. And an example of yesterday, I was over at the board of directors meeting at the senior center where we talked about having to increase rent to $70 per individual to meet the costs associated with running that senior center. But if the city of Homer were to not receive the PERS funding and the revenue going into the revenue sharing, that senior center, which is also going to go over to the city of Homer and ask for assistance with lowering their energy bills by some funds to help with changeover to natural gas, would not be able to do that at all. The city of Homer would be greatly impacted, and I think you're all aware of this because even your communities, Fairbanks, Eagle River, and Wasilla, you understand the impact that not including PERS funding as well as revenue sharing in the budget, how critical that would mean to all Alaskans. And then I just wanted to thank you all again for having included funding for the research reserve and how important that is, again, not only to our small community here in Homer, but all Alaskans. And then just knowing that there are research reserves, throughout other states that receive federal funding, and just that match, that little $175,000, from the state of Alaska, how far that gets stretched throughout Alaska into all of our communities by providing jobs. So I want to again thank you very much for your support of Homer as you whenever you find any other opportunity for Homer. We appreciate that. But thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Mr. Zach. Maria Calhoun.
Good afternoon. My name is Maria Calhoun. I'm a fourth-generation lifelong Alaskan. I work at Sprout Family Services as a Parents as Teachers Program Coordinator. First, I just want to thank you, the committee, each of you on the Senate Finance Committee, for your time and energy. As I share and say, I highly urge that we stand with the governor's operating budget as written, with full funding to parents as teachers programs in Alaska. Make early learning a priority this year as Alaska legislature debates. As far as where our dollars go, it's just so important. I could speak to the programmatic, economical, or moral rationale for maintaining and even increasing parents as teachers funding, or I could talk about the services that we offer, but today I would like to focus on Sprout's parents as teachers outcomes in our 10 Southern Kenai Peninsula communities. Jill Lush just spoke about research on return of investment, and our program evaluation outcomes showed marked change leading to an increase in family strengths in four areas. The first was families' relationships with their child, which is providing nurturing, positive discipline, and child safety. That
That increased 18%. Use of supportive resources, information and referrals, that also increased 18%. Obtaining health and medical care went up 29%. Obtaining basic essentials like housing, transportation, and child care, that increased by 19%. Amazingly, families and parents of teachers reported that their perceived parental knowledge increased by a whopping 25%. So clearly our program affects key factors that contribute to a decrease in incidents of child abuse and neglect. In a nutshell, in only 2 years, our increased annual enrollment numbers went from 12 to 81 kiddos. Children. Our forecasted annual enrollment will increase to 90-plus children for this fiscal year. We have a crowd of 10 families at any given time, and so as you can see, the demand far exceeds current staff availability. As a licensed professional counselor, I started working within the Parents of Teachers program as not only is it absolutely preventative on a grassroots level, I believe in the potential for lifelong success, that it's just so much greater when starting early in life. I'm proud to share the ways in which these funds have built our communities to be stronger and more sustainable. So again, please keep these funds in the governor's budget. In addition to supporting parents as teachers, please continue to maintain Best Beginnings funding as well, which promotes community early childhood engagement and early literacy. Thanks so much, and have a good evening.
Thank you. Mr. Hornaday, Jim Hornaday.
Yes, my name is Jim Hornaday. I serve on the Community Council for KBRR, and I want to advise that the sun is always shining in Homer, as you know. I have three main points per my church upbringing that sermons should have 3 points. First point is science, second point is economics, the third point is state responsibility. First point, science. The Bay Reserve in Homer is the furthest north national estuarine research reserve, and so we are the canary in the coal mine on climate change. And of course, being Alaska, we have to be the biggest and the best. As a former mayor, I know that there is a close connection with the work of the reserve with the City of Homer Climate Change Plan, as the reserve scientists are doing leading research on ocean rise, uplift, and erosion. The reserve works and coordinates with numerous other agencies, such as Kitsitsina Bay, the College, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Center for Coastal Studies, Pratt Museum, and many other environmental organizations with active youth and adult education programs. Point two, economics. The Bay Reserve is a very important economic engine in this area, bringing in millions of dollars over the years in wages and grants. Also, as the fishing industry is key to our economic survival, the Bay Reserve work on salmon and the overall health of Kachemak Bay is very important to the overall economy. Also, the preservation of the beauty and integrity of the environment is essential to the tourist industry. Point number three, state responsibility. Number three in this short sermon is the request that the city consider passing a resolution. I've already covered that. It's very important that the state continue to meet its original obligations agreed to by the state when the Islands and Oceans Facility was constructed and subsequent participation of the state as a NOAA partner as required by NOAA over the last 12 years. There is some indication, as previously indicated, that if the state does not provide a partner, NOAA may well require substantial funds to be refunded. Thank you for putting it in your budget, and also go Sprout.
Thank you, Mr. Hornaday. Are there any other testifiers in the Homer, Ohio?
That's all
in
Homer. Thank you.
We have about 10 minutes until public testimony closes down, so I'm going to take it at ease, and at 4:30 we will close off public testimony.
We're back on the record. This concludes public testimony. If there are no other people in LIOs or online, looking at the audio people, they say there are none. With that, we will close public testimony and adjourn this meeting until tomorrow at 9? Tomorrow at 9, yeah. So, we are adjourned until tomorrow at 9 o'clock.